أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، صلى الله على محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين. إن شاء الله everyone is doing well. إن شاء الله our dear brothers and sisters are enjoying their spiritual journey throughout the month of Ramadan. We are here again with another one of our live sessions that we will be discussing the rulings and fatwas of Ayatollah Khamenei and Ayatollah Sistani regarding the topic of fasting. If you haven't picked this up already, I'm sure you have. If you didn't know it already, I'm sure you've picked this up at this point, that this is the idea of fasting, although we generally have a general idea of what fasting is about and the rulings. A lot of people know a lot of the fundamental rulings, alhamdulillah. I'm sure you've picked up this in the past 5 or 6 days that we have this, we've had these sessions. I think today is the 7th day. That there is definitely a lot to the details of the rulings of fasting and psalm. So, and that's why it definitely needs these types of sessions where we can sit down and discuss the rulings in detail. So, welcome to another live session of Mizan. Like we've mentioned before, this is one of the projects being done under Mizan Institute, and Mizan Institute will be carrying out more projects that have a general feel like this. Maybe not on this particular format, in this particular format, but other projects that also will be basically targeting those educational needs that our communities have. And hopefully we'll be trying to use some of the methods that haven't been taken advantage of in the past, such as this Facebook Live platform and other platforms as well. Today, inshallah, I will be continuing with the discussion of Muftirat. As you know, Sheikh Amin has been having his own discussions, and I had started discussing the topic or the section of Muftirat, the invalidators of your fast, and we will continue with that. And I believe by tomorrow, inshallah, Sheikh Amin will finish off this topic of Muftirat, and then we will move on to some of the other sections that we have under the topic of fasting. So before I start with today's points and rulings, I do want to mention that inshallah you will please like the Mizan Institute Facebook page if you haven't already done that. Also, please feel free to send in your questions and your comments, feedback as well. We definitely welcome all of those. As Sheikh Amin mentioned, I think it was yesterday or a couple days ago, we really don't have, questions come in sometimes and people might be a little hesitant. Oh, is this a good question? Is it a bad question? No, if it's a question that has been on your mind and it's, you know, it's something that you deal with, then it's definitely a good question and we would welcome it. So don't be hesitant in that regard. You have noticed, of course, that there are many times where a question will come up, and for certain reasons, we might delay answering to it because a delay in the sense that we won't answer it right there and then when we get the comment or the question, but we might delay it in the sense that we might answer it the next day or the day after that. And that is because the rulings of fasting have so many details to them, and you will see this when we get to the issue and the section of traveling while fasting. There are so many details to them that a lot of times it takes, even if someone has already read the ruling before, they will have to double check and go back and make sure that the answer they are giving has to do with the particular situation that this particular brother or sister is asking about. So we will be doing that, and you'll actually be seeing more of that as we move forward. Because like I said, when it comes to the issue of traveling, it gets very detailed. It's actually one of the most detailed sections of fiqh and ahkam that I've personally come across. We have a number of sections that are detailed when it comes to fiqh and jurisprudence. Khums is one of them. Another one of the ones that's very detailed is the idea of traveling while fasting. But nonetheless, please send in your questions. If we're able to answer right there and then, during the live session, then we will definitely do that. If not, then we will, offline, we will take a look at it and take a look at the books and inshallah get back to you guys as we have been doing. Some of the questions that were answered The next day, forgive me, some of the questions were answered a day or two afterwards, but we will definitely get to them eventually. All right, so I mentioned that. Just want to make sure I got across all the points. Oh, one point that I do want to mention is that today, inshallah, I will be discussing four of the muftirat. Well, three technically, plus another one that we were building suspense about in the previous sessions. Because of that, it is, as some people say, it's going to be a relatively slower day compared to the other days that we had, because we will have a little bit less content to cover. Feel free to ask your questions and send in your questions from now, so that inshallah, as we move ahead and I cover the content that we are going to be covering today, we will naturally have some extra time to go through some questions, either at the end or while we're going through a live session as well. Let me go through a quick review of what we discussed. Before that, let me just pull up the comments here so I can see you guys' comments as we are continuing with the discussion. Yes, Brother Rahim says, Assalamu alaikum wa alaikum assalam. Review of what we discussed a couple days ago. First thing we said was that eating and drinking accidentally, I'm going to go through these very quickly because you're already familiar with them. We said eating and drinking accidentally is not going to create a problem for the fasting. And that is absolutely correct. There is one tiny update that I need to make here, and that is it actually really doesn't affect, I would say, 99.9% of us, but nonetheless, let me just mention it. And that is this, that Ayatollah Sistani in particular, he says that if someone takes some water into his mouth and he's thirsty, and he takes that water into his mouth and he wants to move the water around in his mouth to cool down a little bit, in that particular situation, if he happens to accidentally swallow a little bit, he does have to make up for that fast. But a bunch of these conditions that I just mentioned have to apply. So it really doesn't, it's a very, very rare situation. So once again, if someone is fasting, they're thirsty, and because they're thirsty, they take water into their mouth, and they do that to cool down their mouth, not to rinse their mouth, which is like what we normally deal with, not to rinse their mouth. That, if you swallow that, that's not a problem accidentally. If you put water into your mouth in order to move it around in your mouth a little bit to cool down, which is not really the best way to cool down anyways. but if you do that and you swallow it accidentally, Ayatollah Sistani says that you will have to make up for that fast. So I just wanted to mention that point real quick. Again, it's not really something that will affect many of us, if any of us really. So that's the first ruling that we mentioned a couple of days ago. We moved on. We said the taste of food. If someone has the taste of a food left in their mouth, that also is not going to break their fast, as long as that taste is not coming from the actual particles of the food. So if you rinse out the particles of the food from your mouth, then a little bit of the taste that remains, not going to break your fast. We built on that and we said that therefore, flossing, brushing, using mouthwash throughout the day, if you rinse your mouth, is not going to create a problem for your fast, because what is left in your mouth is actually the taste of that toothpaste and that floss or that brushing or whatever the case may be. It's not the actual particles of the toothbrush or the toothpaste. Therefore, it's not going to be a problem. We also mentioned that water left in your mouth after rinsing your mouth is not going to create a problem for your fasting. We said this because, as we mentioned before, the water that is left in your mouth after you are done rinsing your mouth is going to be so little that it's going to get dissolved into your mouth, and that's going to become part of your saliva and you can swallow that. So that's why we mentioned the water that is left in the mouth after rinsing it is not going to create a problem for someone's fasting. Next point that we did cover was the idea of when someone's mouth starts bleeding. We said that if someone's mouth starts bleeding, if the bleeding is very little, then there's nothing to worry about, as long as they mix around their tongue a little bit in the mouth and it gets dissolved into their saliva. Also, that's not going to be a problem. And as a point on the side, we mentioned that you also don't need to wash your mouth because the mouth is such that the moment you remove the najasat itself from the mouth, it becomes tahir. So a lot of times, I know we're used to a lot, especially in our cultures. Like for example, in the Iranian culture, if you put something najis in your mouth, God forbid, they say, "Oh well, now you have to go wash your mouth," right? But that's technically not necessary, and that does make life a little bit easier sometimes. So with the bleeding, if the bleeding is very little and it gets dissolved into your mouth, then you don't really have to worry about that anymore. If not, then yes, of course you will have to rinse your mouth, and you're not allowed to swallow the blood that is in your mouth. If you can feel it down your throat and things like that, then you should not be swallowing that. That's another point we covered 2 days ago. Moving on, we said if blood is taken from our body, I think Sheikh Amin also touched on this. If blood is taken from our body, that is not going to break our fast. Donating blood, therefore, is not going to be a problem. If you go to the dentist and you know that the work that they're going to be doing is going to actually lead to your mouth bleeding at one point or another, as it naturally would, I don't think you'll ever go to a dentist. Maybe probably for cleaning, I guess. But other than that, it's definitely going to start bleeding at one point or another. That's not going to be a problem just because your mouth is bleeding. We actually mentioned that some of our marajas say that's makruh, and that's why maybe people think that it is going to break your fast. We said next question that we answered is whether it's wajib to floss and brush before fajr. We mentioned that as long as you are not sure that you will swallow the food that is left in your teeth, it is not going to be wajib for you to do the brushing and the flossing before fajr, right? It's good to, but it's not going to be wajib. We discussed that. And then the last three issues that we discussed, which all of them were pretty important, were these. Number one was taking medicine. We said medicine, depending on how you take it, it might or may not break your fast. We said if you take it through the mouth, definitely it's going to break your fast. If you take it through the nose, it is also going to break your fast. And of course, if you take it through your nose and it makes its way to your throat, of course. And we said if you take it through your eye or your ear or other parts of your body, as in the question that one of the brothers asked about the nicotine patches that people might be using, they said the ruling on that was that that is not going to break your fast. And we also mentioned why that is the case, because amongst normal people, amongst common people, the common view, they do not consider that eating or drinking amongst, commonly. They do technically say that you consume something, but amongst the urf and the common people, they won't consider you eating and drinking things. So that's a little bit of the technical aspect of it. Then we moved on to the second issue, was shots, injections, and IV fluids. We mentioned that according to Ayatollah Sistani, none of these are going to be an issue, and we read off of them, off of the ruling from Minhaj al-Salihin. And we said for Ayatollah Khamenei, it's very similar. The only difference is that shots are injections that you take that are going to go into your veins. Or shots or injections that you take that are going to give you strength, or the technical wording for it is mughadhi, something that it's like basically like food in the sense that it gives you nutrition and strength and makes you stronger basically throughout the day. Ihtiyat wajib, Ayatollah Khamenei said that you are not allowed to take those, but the other ones are fine. So if you take a shot to numb a certain part of your body, as in the case of the dentist that we were just talking about, then that is not going to create a problem. So that was shots, injections, and IV fluids. And the last point that we discussed was asthma inhalers. Now, again, let me mention this because, again, this is not going to make a big difference for a lot of us. But let me mention this, that with asthma inhalers, with Ayatollah Sistani's ruling, he said it's not a problem, and I actually double-checked that multiple times today. With Ayatollah Khamenei, and I think I had forgotten to mention this last time we were discussing this topic, with Ayatollah Khamenei, he has ihtiyat wajib. So he says, according to obligatory precaution, you are not allowed to use asthma inhalers. But because this is an obligatory precaution, then it would be permissible for us to refer to Ayatollah Sistani and therefore asthma inhalers would not necessarily be a problem for us. I do want to mention that the reason why there was a slight misunderstanding here is because this ruling is actually one of the rulings that has changed for Ayatollah Khamenei before. If you look at some of the content that he had from previous years, he had no problem at all with the asthma inhaler, but this is one of those rulings that has changed lately. So he does say ihtiyat wajib, you should not be using asthma inhalers, but like I said, it is permissible to refer to another marja, in this case, Ayatollah Khamenei. I'm not sure if you guys are noticing the change in the lighting here. It's because it's a partly cloudy day, so the clouds come and go. It's not my spirituality that's going up and down or anything like that. This is the clouds that are coming and going, and so that is why you guys see the change in the lighting of the video. All right, so that's a review of what we had discussed yesterday. Let me take a quick look at the comments here. Alaikum salam. Yes, alhamdulillah, we have viewers in Australia as well. Thank you very much for your nice and kind words. Sister Sukaina has a question. Would you need to make a niyyah of ruju' in that case of asthma inhaler? I'm not sure what you mean. I think what the question is that when you are using the asthma inhaler, you say that, okay, well, Ayatollah Khamenei is ihtiyat wajib, so I'm going to refer to Ayatollah Sistani. From what I know, yes, but doing niyat of ruju is not like something out of this world or anything, right? It's just that you know that, like, you know, Ayatollah Sistani allows this, so I'm just going to be acting upon his ruling. So, the answer to your question would be yes, but it doesn't, like I said, it's not like some, because niyat sometimes, I think Sheikh Amin has covered this before, if I'm not mistaken. Niyat is taught to us in certain ways where, like, you have to, like, everywhere has to be quiet and you have to sit for a couple seconds. And you have to be like, okay, now I am going to do niyat. It's good to do niyat in that way, right? Because so you focus on what it is that you're doing. But it's not wajib to do niyat in that particular. Niyat just means that you know, okay, Ayatollah, you know, Sistani allows this, so I'm gonna be able to do this. That is not gonna create a problem. We have a question from Brother Amir about traveling. If I go to work in the morning, which is about 30 miles from my city, then coming back to home after Dhuhr, then in the evening travel to friend's house for iftar, which is about an hour away, is the fast still accepted? Brother Amir, let me mention this from right now. That's good that this question was brought up. From now on, brothers and sisters, we will need to know whether you are following Ayatollah Sistani or Ayatollah Khamenei to answer the questions. And the reason for this is because when it comes to the issue of traveling for fasting, the rulings are quite different, actually. Well, quite different in the sense that there are a number of details where the details are actually different from one another, especially when it comes to people who travel very often for work. So, depending on whether this is Ayatollah Sistani's brother Amir Rahimi, if you are following Ayatollah Sistani or Ayatollah Khamenei, please let us know, because depending on that, the answer is actually going to be slightly different. There are certain conditions that have to be met according to Ayatollah Sistani, certain conditions that have to be met according to Ayatollah Khamenei. So, yes, Ayatollah Khamenei. Okay, so for Ayatollah Khamenei, if this 30 miles, again, this is why things get a little difficult with these questions. It depends what we mean by these 30 miles. Is it 30 miles from the end of your city, or is it 30 miles from where you live? I got a question, I think 3 or 4 days ago, from one of my friends. And he was asking, oh, well, I traveled for this many miles. And I said, okay, well, if you travel for that many miles, then naturally your fast is going to become, it's going to become, you know, you're not going to be able to fast anymore. Well, that was the question he was asking me. And when I asked him about where he traveled from one side of the city to the other side of the city. And it was like a very big, a very long, you know, distance that he had traveled, but he was traveling inside of the city. So again, Brother Rahim, Brother Amir, if this 30 miles that we're talking about, is traveling outside of the city 30 miles, right? From the point where you leave the city 30 miles. That's one situation. If you're traveling inside of the city for 30 miles, which can happen, or a part of it at least is inside of the city for 30 miles, then that is going to be a different case. All right, so he's saying that 30 miles from the border of the city, I live close to the border of the city. Okay, so traveling, we will be covering, inshallah, starting from my next session. But because Brother Amir has asked this question, let me just answer this real quick. According to Ayatollah Khamenei, if it is you're traveling and you're traveling for work, okay, and this traveling is happening frequently, so much that amongst the common view, people say, hey, yeah, he has to travel for his work. So let's say in your case, from what I'm understanding from your question, you are traveling every single day for 30 miles. Then in this case, you will become kathir as-safar. And a person who does become kathir as-safar is going to be able to fast while traveling. Again, this is Ayatollah Khamenei's ruling. Ayatollah Sistani's ruling is different. So in fact, Ayatollah Sistani has just become a little bit more detailed, actually. So hopefully I was able to answer your question, Brother Amir. When you say when you come back, you travel to someone's house inside of the city, then that's not going to create a problem if it's inside of the city, which is what I understood from your question. Okay, so like I said, rulings on traveling, we will not be discussing them today. I did answer Brother Amir's question for today, but we will be discussing that inshallah in the following sessions. The reason for that is because with traveling, like I've mentioned, I think I mentioned a couple times today, that it gets a little detailed, and therefore we have to go through some of the rulings, and then the brothers can learn those rulings, and then they can inshallah try to basically use those rulings to answer some of their own questions, basically. Let me see us. I'm not sure. Salam Shaykh, wa alaikum as-salam. When performing salat and after making takbir to begin, you lose concentration during Fatiha and think of unnecessary thoughts. Do you stop prayer and restart or continue and try to regather? The answer is absolutely not. You should not be stopping. You should absolutely be continuing your salat. So that's not gonna, all of us lose concentration, all of us in the sense that it happens to the human being sometimes. So if you lose your concentration, you will continue with your namaz. All right. I do see another question from Sister Sukaina Mamdani. I will get to your question if we discuss a little bit of the rulings, and then I will get to your question, inshallah, Sister Sukaina. All right, so let's continue with the other muftirat that we have here. The next muftir that we want to talk about has to do with attributing false things and lies to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to God, to the Prophet, and to our Imams. So, according to Ayatollah Sistani and Ayatollah Khamenei, this, according to obligatory precaution, will break your fast. If you remember at the very beginning, when we started discussing the muftirat, we said that Ayatollah Sistani, he has a number of muftirat that he says for sure will break your fast, and then a number of them he says according to obligatory precaution. This one is one of them. If you attribute something false to the Ahlul Bayt and to the Ahlul Bayt, or to be more precise, we should say the Imams, the Prophet, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Okay, now a couple points that come to mind here. Number one, and I think a number of people had asked this question before, if we are reading Quran or we are reading a hadith and we make a mistake in reading the hadith or reading the verses of the Quran, this is not going to break your fast in any shape or form or fashion. Okay, so just so we're clear on that. So that's not going to break your fast because you made a mistake in reading this verse or that verse. That's one point. The second point, if someone mentions something that they think to be true about the Prophet, something they think to be true about the Imam, something they think to be true about God and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, And then later on, they find out that no, in fact, it was wrong. This also will not break their fast. Let me read right off of Minhaj as-Salihin for this real quick. Yes, this is ruling actually page 299 from volume 1, ruling. Well, it says Ar-Rabi', so number 4. It's discussing the fourth invalidator of fasting. Al-kidhbu 'ala Allah ta'ala aw 'ala Rasulillah aw 'ala al-a'imma 'ala al-ahwati wujuban. So according to obligatory precaution. And then he continues. He says, "Wa'idha," the last line. "Wa'idha qasada as-sidq fa bana kadiban lam yadhur." So if he thinks that what he is saying is true, and then later on he finds out that what he was saying is actually not true, this is not going to create a problem for him. This, of course, is something we don't deal with that often. But sometimes you might mention something about the Prophet, something about the life of this imam or that imam that you thought actually to be true. Like if they ask you in that moment, you confidently say, "Yes, this is true. This actually happened. This happened in that battle. This happened, for example, in Karbala. The imam said this, for example." Of course, we're not talking about history in general. We're talking about the things that have to do with the imams, right? So if that's the case, then it's not going to create a problem for your fast because you thought that this is actually true. Okay. There is a third point that I need to mention about this issue, a third point that we need to mention about this issue, and that is about situations where I am not sure, is this true or is this not true? This is different from what we just mentioned. What we just mentioned were situations where I was sure in that particular situation, if you ask me, brother, sister, is this true? I would say yes. This is what happened in the life of this imam. This is what happened to the prophet. This is what the prophet said. We said that if that's what you were thinking, and then later on you found out that you were wrong, that's not going to be a problem. Now, what we're discussing is a situation where from the very beginning, I'm not even sure. So, this actually happens more often, I think, than the one before, because a lot of times when we're looking at this hadith or that hadith, or a lot of times when we're looking at some narration about the time of the Prophet, or I shouldn't say about the time of the Prophet, about the Prophet himself and his life and what he did, we're not really sure if this actually happened or not. A lot of the details that have to do with the lives of the Prophet or the Imams, the details, of course, well, you're not really sure about them necessarily. Even if they're mentioned in a hadith or not, sometimes you're not sure if the hadith is a reliable one or not. So, what are we supposed to do in situations like this? According to Ayatollah Khamenei, if someone mentions something like that, it's okay. It's not a problem. For Ayatollah Sistani, he says that no, if you're going to mention something like this, you're not sure if it's true or not, then make sure to say that this has been narrated. Put it basically put the responsibility on the book that you are narrating this from. Put the responsibility on the person you heard this from, right? Like for example, you heard this in a speech. You say, "In a speech I heard, or in a speech this was being said that the Prophet said this or did this. In such and such book I read that the Prophet said this or this." So you are placing, in other words, a responsibility on that book and on that individual. So in that way, you are attributing it not directly to the Imam and the Prophet. You are attributing it first and foremost to that book or that source, and of course indirectly to the Imam or to the Prophet. Ayatollah Sistani says if you don't do this, then in some situations it will, according to obligatory precaution, it will break your fast. But because he has obligatory precaution, someone might be able to refer to Ayatollah Khamenei, which he said it's not a problem. If you don't reference that book or that source, or if you don't basically reference the source directly and the imam indirectly, he said it was not going to break your fast. But just so we're on the safe side, just make sure you always do that. If you mention a hadith or something like that, something about the life of the imam or the prophet or something like that, forgive me, that is, just make sure that we reference the book and things of that nature. All right. Let me come back real quick to. All right. Sister Sukaina Mamdani had asked, What if you start traveling for work out of state during the month of Ramadan, but are not usually a regular traveler for work? Sister Sukaina, if you are traveling out of the city for work and you started during Ramadan, and you are not usually a regular traveler for work, then I'm not sure. I'm assuming you are a follower of Ayatollah Sistani. It depends actually what type of work you're doing. Is it the type of work where you are traveling because you're traveling is your job, or no, you're traveling because you want to go somewhere and do your job, right? I'm assuming it's the second one. You're traveling somewhere, you're going to go somewhere to do your job. If that is the case, and from the common view, you are not considered traveling often, then it's not going to, you will not be able to fast. But again, you will have to let us know if this is Ayatollah Sistani's ruling. You will have to let us know exactly how often you are traveling, because unfortunately, with Ayatollah Sistani's ruling, it's a little detailed. It depends on how long you plan to be traveling. It depends on how often you are traveling. Depends on a lot of stuff. For Ayatollah Khamenei, it's a little bit more convenient in the sense that he puts a lot of the emphasis on the common view and whether the common view considers you the type of person who travels often for work or not. So it's pretty easy. But with Ayatollah Sistani's ruling, it gets a bit complicated. So you will have to let us know how much exactly you are traveling and how long you plan to be traveling as well. Brother Salim, yes, Sheikh Amin has discussed that in the previous sessions. All right. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Hadi. Very nice to see that you are back. Okay, so we covered that. So that's the idea of attributing something false to the Imams or the Ahlul Bayt. So we discussed that already. Moving on to the next issue, or the next muftir, the next thing that will invalidate your fast. Again, this one is according to obligatory precaution. That is the idea of swallowing thick dust or thick smoke. So, according to obligatory precaution, if you swallow thick dust or thick smoke, this is going to break your fast. Now, this dust or this smoke can have multiple sources, or basically whatever is mixed up in the air that you're going to swallow. Whatever's creating this smoke or this dust, it could be anything, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be like something that's on fire necessarily. It could be thick dust in the sense that you enter into an environment where, just for the sake of explaining what I mean, it might be someone was vacuuming and they were vacuuming in a really bad way, or someone was, I forgot what they call those tools they use in their hands. Something like mopping up a certain place, but for you know the brooms, yes. If someone was brooming and they were doing it very heavily, if they were an amateur, they don't really work at home, and now they want to help out. Usually, that's what happens with amateurs if they haven't actually done work at home. But if they're brooming and they're brooming very hard, then it's going to be. This dust, if it's a lot of dust, then even swallowing that is going to, again, according to obligatory precaution, is going to create a problem for your fast. This obligatory precaution is there for Ayatollah Sistani and Ayatollah Khamenei. So unfortunately, you know, we can't refer to either one of them that would allow it, basically. So that is it. So I did already mention this point that it doesn't matter what the dust is. Or maybe you enter into an environment where there's a lot of like someone is making food. It's a rare example. It's a very rare situation. But maybe there's a lot of flour that's being used and it's up in the air, for example. The dust could be anything, really. All right. So now that we mentioned that, let me move on, obviously, to two main issues. And the answer to these two main issues is the same thing, right? Those two main issues are this. Number one is smoking. cigarettes, and number two is the issue of, shisha, or I don't know, I think they have like 20 different names for it at this point. What is the ruling on these things? According to Ayatollah Sistani, the ruling would be the same thing. You are swallowing thick smoke, and therefore, according to obligatory precaution, this is going to break your fast. I don't know of any other marajah who allow this, so that you could refer to them by any chance. Maybe they're out there, maybe they're not. I really don't know about that. But Ayatollah Sistani and Ayatollah Khamenei, both of them have the same ruling with regards to this issue. Now, just to put an end to this discussion, because this idea of smoking, it's one of those issues that I've seen every Ramadan it comes up. Every Ramadan question: is it allowed? Is it not allowed? So let me answer this. Read off of the question that was in the website of Ayatollah Sistani. Specifically, sometimes they say, okay, what if someone can't control themselves? What if it's very difficult for them? Maybe they need that comforting sense that smoking a cigarette might give them, or whatever, and it's very difficult for them to not smoke throughout the day. Are they allowed to smoke in that case? Right? So let me read right off of the fatwa that Ayatollah Sistani has. السؤال هل الإمام السيستاني دام ظله قد أفتى بجواز التدخين في شهر رمضان للصائم الذي لا يستطيع تركها؟ He says, is it true that Ayatollah Sistani, this is the question, is it true that Ayatollah Sistani has given a fatwa that you are allowed to smoke throughout the month of Ramadan, especially for a sa'im, someone who is fasting, who cannot stop, smoking? Is it true that he gave such a fatwa? Al-jawab, lam yufti samahatuhu bidhalik. He has never given such a fatwa. Bal yahtatu wujuban bikawn at-tadkhiri muftara. Rather, he says, according to obligatory precaution, smoking is going to break your fast. فعلى المدخن أن يضبط نفسه ويمتنع عن التدخين في صيام شهر رمضان. Therefore, someone who's used to smoking, he has to be able to control himself throughout the month of Ramadan, and refrain from doing such a thing. ولكن إذا أتى به لأي سبب كان. However, if he ends up doing it, in the sense that he ends up doing something that is not allowed for him, فَإِنَّهُ يَلْزَمُهُ الْإِمْسَاكُ بَقِيَّةَ النَّهَارِ ثُمَّ الْقَضَاءُ عَلَى الْأَحْوَادِ. Therefore, he will have to still stay away from the other things that will make his fast batil. This is referring to that point that we mentioned a number of times before, that even after someone breaks their fast, they still have to refrain from the stuff that would normally break their fast. Still, it is going to be haram for them to continue to eat or drink and things of that nature. All right, so that's the idea. The same thing with shisha is practically going to be the same thing, because actually in some of the fatwa of Ayatollah Sistani, there was a particular note made there that it doesn't matter if this smoke, this thick smoke, is coming from it's a cigarette or it's tobacco or whatever the case may be. If it's thick smoke, then swallowing it, according to obligatory precaution, is going to be a problem. Let me read right off of this ruling before we move on. Yes, this is page 300. As-sadis, the sixth invalidator. تعمد إدخال الغبار أو الدخان الغليظين في الحلق على القهوة وجوباً وَلَا بَأْسَ بِغَيْرِ الْقَلِيدِ مِنْهُمَا. And if that dust or that smoke is not thick, that is not going to create a problem for someone's fast. Let me also mention this. If someone has a doubt, right? If someone has a doubt whether this dust, for example, that I am swallowing right now, they go out on the street and this dust that comes up, they have a doubt, is this really thick or is it not really? People won't really consider this thick. If that's the case, again, it's not going to be a problem for your fasting. So if you have a doubt about it, it's not going to create a problem. But obviously smoking is not like that, because based on what Ayatollah Sistani's answer is saying here, at least it's in his perspective, it is definitely considered to be thick. All right. So that's what we wanted to cover here. Let me see if we have any more questions here. Yes, Sister Sukaina is saying traveling back and forth every week throughout the month for Sistani. The travel will be for several months. Yes, Brother Hadi is actually asking the most important question. Is it going to continue for 6 months or not? So if it's not going to continue for 6 months, then you naturally would not be considered as someone who is going to travel a lot every week throughout the month. And again, even with that, I know we're getting a little detailed here, but this the rulings on traveling are very detailed, and like I said, even when you say traveling back and forth, it depends on how many days you are traveling back and forth. Because if you are traveling, if it's just 2 or 3 months, and you are traveling every day, sometimes Ayatollah Sistani says that you will not be able to fast at all. Sometimes with the namaz, he says that you have to do qasr and tamam together. So it gets a little detailed there. Another question that we have is, Shaykh, what is the ruling on being an imam to lead prayer? And is it more beneficial to pray in congregation or alone within your own household? If you can pray in congregation, that is always going to be better than praying alone. Ruling on being an imam to lead prayer, it has its own conditions, but the main condition is to be a just individual, which means a type of person who doesn't commit sins. If someone has committed a sin before and stuff like that, if they do tawbah, they do istighfar, then they will be able to lead the jama'at. So hopefully, I know there's more to be said about that question, but that's not the topic that we are discussing today, so I will leave it at that. Okay, let me move on to the third invalidator that we're going to be discussing today. I do want to mention this again. I mentioned this at the very beginning, that if you guys have questions, please send them in, because today we don't have as much content, although now that I see the time, I don't think we'll have much time to discuss them. But if you guys do have questions, you can send them in. I think we'll have extra time to discuss them at the end. It could be, let me just say this, it could be regarding anything with regards to fasting, but if it has to do with traveling, especially traveling a lot, again, if it's a simple question, I'll answer it right there and then. Otherwise, we will discuss it in the future. But nonetheless, please send in your questions, because if we can get to them today, I'll answer them right now. And if not, we'll discuss them in the next session. Because the next session that I have, inshallah, we will be doing the idea of traveling while fasting. And that will go on, I think, for 2 sessions at least, maybe even 3. We'll just have to see how that goes. Okay, the third invalidator that I do want to cover for today is throwing up. I think someone asked this question yesterday, actually, from Sheikh Amin. Throwing up, brothers and sisters, if it is done on purpose, it is going to break someone's fast. This is one of those rulings. Let me just pull up the ruling real quick. This is one of those things that will break your fast, according to Ayatollah Sistani and Ayatollah Khamenei. And they have a fatwa on it, so it will definitely break your fast. It's not one of those things that will be according to obligatory precaution or anything like that. Okay, so just to be clear about that. Now, so one thing we do understand, if you throw up on purpose, this is going to break your fast. Even if, brothers and sisters, someone is in a difficult situation, they had something really bad last night, they had a lot of food, they had a 5-course meal, I don't even know if such a thing exists or not, for iftar, right? And a 3-course meal for iftar. And, you know, once they start their fasting the next day, they're like, oh, they're feeling really bad. And because they're feeling so bad, they have to force themselves to, forgive me, to throw up and remove the food from their mouth, or from their body, basically. If someone does that, that is still going to break their fast, because they are the ones who are actively throwing up, right? They're forcing themselves to throw up. However, if someone is just continuing, they're just living their life, right? And for whatever reason, they all of a sudden they feel nauseous and they throw up. That is not going to break their fast. Let's just say in a situation where someone may not know that they're pregnant, right? And they might all of a sudden just feel nauseous. And obviously, this is during the first couple of days, right? Not couple of days, but those first couple of weeks and stuff like that. If they throw up like that, then that's not going to be a problem. Let me read this. Page 303, Al-Ashir, the 10th of the invalidators of fasting. تَعَمُّدُ الْقَيْءِ, if you throw up on purpose. وَإِن كَانَ لِلْضَرُورَةٍ, even if it is being done because of something necessary. مِنْ عِلَاجِ مَرَضٍ وَنَحْوِهِ وَلَا بَعْسَ بِمَا كَانَ سَهْوًا أَوْ مِنْ غَيْرِ اخْتِيَارٍ. But if it's done involuntarily, you're living your life and then it just happens, then that is not going to break your fast. So that has to do with throwing up. Let me just check here. Yes. Okay. Now, along the lines of this issue of throwing up comes the issue of, forgive me, burping. If someone burps, it's very simple. If someone burps and something does leave their mouth and it comes up to their, something does leave their throat, basically, forgive me, and it comes up to their mouth, they will have to get rid of it. Now, some Aitla Sistani might say ihtiyat wajib and stuff like that, but either ihtiyat wajib or fatwa, they say that you do have to get rid of it. So if it does come into your mouth or it does come above your throat to a point where you are able to get rid of it, then you will have to do that in order to get rid of that thing. And therefore, if it does, something does come up, and forgive me, someone just swallows it, then that is going to create a problem for their fast. According to either ihtiyat wajib or fatwa, but it is going to create a problem for their fast. Similarly, the other thing that will that also comes up here is acid reflux, right? If someone has had a lot of food and they're having that heartburn along with the acid reflux that happens sometimes, same thing applies. If it just comes up to the throat, which is normally the case, and it goes back down, then that is not going to be a problem. But if it continues all the way and it comes up, something like you can remove the food, for example, or whatever has been in the stomach, then it is going to, you should remove it and you should not swallow it, right? Yes. So we see Brother Ahmed also mentioned acid reflux. But naturally with acid reflux, I mean, as far as I know, it's not something that will come out to a point where you can actually remove it from your mouth. But if you're able to remove it, then you should be removing that from your mouth. Let me see here. Yeah, so what we do have left is one more of the muftirat of fasting, one more of the invalidators of fasting that is not considered an invalidator according to Atila Sistani. We're going to get to that in just a second. That's the one that I've been mentioning from the first day, that most people think it doesn't invalidate your fast, but in fact, it does not invalidate your fast. So we'll get to that in just a second, but let me take a quick look at the questions. In the situation where you are meeting with someone and you have bad breath, are you allowed to use mouthwash? Brother Farhat, we mentioned this the previous days. Yes, absolutely. You are allowed to use that. You just rinse your mouth, and if there's the taste of mouthwash remaining in your mouth, that's fine. But you do have to rinse out the actual mouthwash itself. And Brother Ahmad has asked, does that include acid reflux, which we already covered. Okay, so moving on, this is probably the last point that we want to mention, inshallah, and we will be done. That is this, putting your head under water. In other words, inserting your head into water fully. Okay, this is one of those things that most people think it is going to break your fast. However, according to Ayatollah Sistani, this does not break your fast. I mentioned this earlier, that when I learned about this ruling myself, it was a little surprising for me, because we had always been told that this is one of those things that does in fact break your fast. But according to Ayatollah Sistani, this does not break your fast. I'm going to get to Ayatollah Khamenei's ruling in just a second, but for Ayatollah Sistani, it doesn't. So let me read right off of page 299 from Minhaj. Al-Khamis, the fifth thing that he wants to discuss here, رَمْسُ تَمَامُ الرَّأْسِ فِي الْمَاءِ عَلَى الْمَشْهُورِ بَيْنَ الْفُقَهَاءِ. He says, usually amongst the fuqaha and the jurisprudence, the jurists, I should say, they would consider this as something that would break your fast, where in fact it does not. ولكن المختار أنه لا يضر بصحة الصوم. However, بل هو مكروهة كراهة شديدة. But it is very makruh to do such a thing. Okay. Now, a couple points here. Of course, when we say it is very makruh to do such a thing, what we are referring to is inserting your head fully into water. If your whole head is wet at one particular time, this is not going to be, is not what we're talking about basically. If you insert half of your head at one time and the other half at another time, it's not going to be. Showers, obviously not going to be a problem. None of these are going to are what we are referring to and talking about. What we are talking about is inserting the head fully into the water. If someone happens to accidentally do this, meaning that they were continuing with their life and then something happened and they placed their head in the water accidentally, that is also not going to break their fast. So that's Ayatollah Sistani. Ayatollah Khamenei says, according to obligatory precaution, it will break your fast. But again, because this is Ihtiyat Wajib, it would be possible for us to refer to Ayatollah Sistani in this regard. And therefore, we would not have a problem there. Like I mentioned, if it happens by mistake, sometimes people might be joking around or whatever. Someone pushes you in a swimming pool, you know, that is not going to break your fast. You just get out as soon as you can. Let me mention this real quick while I brought up this topic. Brothers and sisters, playing pranks is I would say a lot of times it is going to be haram to play pranks on people. Now that I brought up this idea of pushing people into the swimming pool. Yes, if your friend is so close to you that you know he's completely fine with this joke that you're doing, this prank that he's pulling off, that you're pulling off, that's not going to be a problem. But if you don't even know this person, or you know that he is going to be bothered by this, then it's going to be a problem if you play pranks. Just because we call it a prank here and there doesn't mean it makes it halal, doesn't mean it makes it okay. No, if it's a prank where it's going to actually bother this person, then it is going to be a problem. It's going to be because you're bothering another mu'min, you're bothering another believer, and bothering another believer is not allowed. I've seen this many times. Sometimes people, multiple different pranks. I don't want to get into the pranks right now. But I just wanted to mention that because we were on that topic. All right, so we are completely done with what I wanted to discuss for today. Inshallah, moving forward, I will be discussing the issue of the challenging issue of traveling while fasting. We will be discussing that. Let me just take a quick look at the comments here. Is trolling halal? Brother Hadi, yes, for you it's halal, not a problem. As long as you're watching and you're learning, if you have to troll along the way, that's not a problem. Alright, so that's it. We are done. If anyone has any questions or anything like that, specifically, especially with regards to the topics that we have discussed up until this point, then you can send them in within the next 20, 30 seconds and stuff like that. If not, then inshallah, we will be ending. We do have, I think, 13, about 12, 13 more sessions to go. So slowly we will be discussing the rest of the rulings that we have regarding fasting as we move forward. Yes, we have a question. Sheikh, I know this was covered, but can you recap briefly on the various Fajr times? Sure, various Fajr times. We mentioned this before, that with various Fajr times, with the Fajr times that you have. So let's say, for example, I'll just take San Antonio where I am, just for the sake of make it easier. Maybe one calendar, this actually happened for some of our community members, where one of the calendars said 5:10 is namaz, for example, or fajr, for example. Another one said 5:20 is fajr. And this community members of ours, were some of them were eating all the way to 5:20. The answer to this question is this, brothers and sisters. When you have multiple times for fajr, you are not necessarily obligated to stop eating until you are sure the time of fajr has come. So that's the answer to that question. However, there is a catch to it, and Sheikh Amin has discussed this before, as the brother or the sister mentioned. In certain situations, if you just eat and then later on you in fact find out that yes, it was the time of fajr had actually come and passed, then you might have to actually make up for those fasts. So it's better to be on the safe side. But in terms of the ruling itself, the answer is this: you can continue eating until you are sure that fajr has come. So based on the timetables, in terms of what is wajib and what is haram, you are allowed to eat until the latest timetable that you have. Maybe 5:15 is the latest timetable they have. Maybe 5:20 is the latest timetable that you have. It's always good to do ihtiyat, of course. Always good to do imsak, as imsak in the sense that you do ihtiyat just to make sure you don't go over time. You take precaution. But as I mentioned, you are allowed to eat until you are sure the time of fajr has come. With regards to maghrib, however, it's the other way around. With regards to maghrib, you are not. What about in regards to praying? Oh, very good question. Before I get to maghrib, with regards to praying, you are not allowed to pray until you are sure the time of fajr has come. Okay, so you might have to wait. That depends on your certainty and your situation. So someone might say, "Hey, I can't rely so much on this timetable. Maybe I'd have to wait for 5 minutes." Okay, for praying, you would have to wait for 5 minutes. Someone might say, "Oh, you have to wait for 2 minutes." Okay, you would have to wait for 2 minutes, right? So for praying, you have to make sure that in fact the time of namaz has come. With regards to iftar, it's the other way around. You are not allowed to start iftar. You are not allowed to start your breaking your fast until you're sure iftar has in fact come. I've seen this question has been brought up many times where someone comes, asks this question, "Sheikh, they just said adhan, can I break my fast right now?" If you are sure that when they say adhan, the time of Maghrib has come, then you can break it. If you're not sure, then it's not allowed for you to break your namaz until you are sure that the time of namaz has come. All right, so that's it. I don't think we have any more questions left. Yes. Okay, we do apparently. Let me just take a look at this. If someone is traveling to a city which is not his or her watan, and gets there after dhuhr, is the ruling is different if he or she would be traveling back to his or her watan? Brother Akbar Rizvi. The answer is, if this person is traveling back to a city that is not his watan, it would depend. Is he basically going to stay there for 10 days or not? If he's not going to stay there for 10 days, which is what I'm understanding from the question, then if he gets there after Dhuhr, oh, wait a second, my bad, I think I misunderstood there. If someone is traveling to a city which is not his or her watan and gets there after Dhuhr, is the ruling different if he or she would be traveling back to his or her watan? Oh, no, if you get there after Dhuhr, then you won't be able to fast that day. If that's a question that the brother is asking, regardless of whether it's your watan or you're not your watan, if you get there after Dhuhr, you're not allowed to fast that day. Fasting, as Sheikh Hamid mentioned yesterday, when you want to leave a place, you have to leave after Dhuhr. But if you want to be able to fast during that day, you want to get to a city, you have to get there before Dhuhr, before Zawar. So in that case, you would not be able to fast that day, Brother Akbar. Hopefully, I answered that question. Thank you very much. That is all the questions that we have for today. As I mentioned, inshallah, we will be doing traveling for fasting, inshallah, starting from next session. And inshallah, in the short future, I do want to mention this also that we will be holding a course in Dallas very soon, inshallah, after the month of Ramadan. Inshallah, very soon, maybe in a matter of a couple days or a couple weeks, not a couple weeks, a couple days actually, 3 or 4 weeks, you guys should hear from us with regards to the finalized time and date and location of when we'll be doing the introduction to the Tafsir of Quran course in Dallas. I'm personally definitely looking forward to that, inshallah. And we'll see what happens, inshallah, with that. Thank you. Wa alaikum assalam.